City.
Hello, my friends. Hello, my friends. Hello, my friends. The mountains let me go, and Spirit brought me back to Northern California in an amazing blitzkrieg odyssey that is still unfolding, but I'm safe. Outside of the 27-foot, 260-square-foot trailer that I'm in, built in 1954, it's a trip. No plastic, lots of curves. That I'm sitting in and doing this show in, I see goats, I hear five different kinds of birds, there are frogs, there are crickets, there is green life exploding all around me. This is the land that I bonded with, and I am so grateful to feel the energy of life here tonight as I come back to you after this trip. 3 weeks to the day. Carolyn Baker did the last two shows. A week before that was the break between, and she did some amazing shows. I deeply want to thank Carolyn for two amazing shows with Francis Weller and Barry Spector. The Francis Weller show, if you have not heard it, man, you need to go hear Francis Weller. He was awesome. And Carolyn did a great job. Thank you so much. I am back in the world of man, and things are happening a little bit. I'm not fully functional yet, but we have some upcoming guests. Next Sunday will be Libby Haleve of Nuclear Hot Seat is going to be our guest. She's got a new book out. We're going to talk about what she's been doing and what's been happening with nuclear issues around the world. On March 23rd, my dear old friend and colleague Richard Heinberg, who I have known for 12 years now and from the Peak Oil Movement, will be joining us. We'll talk a little bit about fracking, but we are going to take a long look back at the years that have passed since we started walking together, and he's quite a fiddle player. We're going to have a song by him on the show that night. And on March 30th, an incredible songwriter, hip-hop artist, Cale Sampson, who's been on Abby Martin, who has dedicatedly kept in touch with me. And there is a song that he wrote and sang that's going to be the subject of a whole show on March 30th, and he'll be our guest that night. I have enormous thank yous to say to Victor Krummenacher, Brian Burgess, Gene Buscaney, Brad Daniel, Carla Hagee, Kevin, that's all, Throster Halderson, Deborah Cronenvet, Mark J., Anita and Jim Caputo, Jenny Shore, Phil Forrester, John Grauer, Brian Washington, Richard Rodemeyer, Gene Mayfield, and Phil Mader. You guys got me here. You guys were and are the wind beneath my wings. We'll get into the story a little bit more, but we got things to talk about tonight. And I am in no immediate financial sense of urgency. I'm doing things like opening bank accounts. The Lincoln's running. But I will talk later on in the show about things that I do need now, and since I am back here, it is so great to start to reconnect because we're on this walk together. So I just wanted to say those thank yous right up front. I got a great letter from Mark J. I had to leave the mountains. It was a matter of life and death, and it was as sudden as it was when I fled to Venezuela in 2006. My instinctive knowing was that if I didn't get out of there now when I had a tiny window, I was going to die, and that was due to the isolation, the extreme climate. The living situation with Doug, my bandmate, was no longer tenable. And more than anything else, I was out of touch. And the mountains let me go and sent me back. But I got a great letter from Mark J. I gather from the podcast that you are mercifully moving to a more hospitable environment and could use some assistance. You have helped me to open eyes to 9/11 and talks recorded on TUC, whatever that is, and to so much more in crossing the Rubicon and the film collapse. I admire your work and the courage it has required, including your now living as a mendicant. I have been something of a student of Buddhism, but it was only as I thought to send you a check that it struck me that living without possessions, subsisting on what is given, is the selfless demonstration that we are inextricably connected, that we can only survive and grow together, that the need of one is the need of all, and therefore only in the giving do we truly receive the gift of teaching. So allow me to thank you. Mark J., that was beautiful. And Birju Pandya, I believe in India, wrote, "Your movement towards the gift economy is quite inspirational. Michael, thank you for your work. My own experiments in the gift have been profoundly impactful, as has exposure to your journey. Bows." Thank you all for getting that. Now, I'm going to be leaving that style of living because, well, get to that later. I've had some amazing things shown to me. Even before I left Colorado, an enormous shift was underway in me, and it had really begun when as a result of immersing over the winter with Terrence McKenna, Graham Hancock, Rion Eisler, Daniel Quinn, amazing things started to unfold inside of me, and I wound up about 4 months ago or so consciously rejecting the male dominant gene, consciously rejecting any dominator paradigm. And the changes in consciousness which have followed were enormous. I left some enormous parts of me in Colorado. I laid down weapons. I am no longer a warrior. I'm a teacher now, and it was time for me to get out. And there were abundant messages that it was time for me to return to the world of man. But during the course of all these travels, I had a lot of internal struggle. I mean, it was difficult. It was a wing and a prayer journey. Emily, that's the name of my Lincoln, is running again. She still needs more work, but the transmission is fine. And we got here, and looking back, it was like, holy cow, how did I ever make it? But that was because I was supposed to. Now, getting back to what was starting to be revealed, I want to reread you a quote from Mimi Gurman that was one of the best quotes of the week. She wrote, I was thinking about the latest, greatest piece of bullshit to hit my computer, which had to do with Hanford and Senator Wyden's stupid town hall meeting in Portland. I was ranting on my NNNW site and said something I wish to give you, Michael, because you are leading the way for this to occur. Quote, I do not hate politicians, she wrote. I only wish they should become completely irrelevant to our lives sooner than later. And as the sooner arrives, we as a society recognize that we need each other and not them in order to live and deal with what they have wrought. Now, that leads to recognition of a very powerful statement I put up on Facebook last night, and that's what we're building toward during the course of the show. And yes, for all of you who want to know, we are going to talk about Abby Martin and the Ukraine, but not in the way most of you would like. Hopefully in the way Abby Martin would like, and hopefully in the way a lot of you who are awake would like. So I consciously rejected the male dominant gene. And I found some fundamental changes taking place inside of me. It's going to be very important later on in the show. For years, because I have spent so many years as a cop, and then the years after that where I hung with special forces and SEALs and managed the largest gun store in the state of California, and had all the various escapades of my career as a warrior, every night when I would go to sleep, almost immediately a kind of fantasy tape would play out about some kind of combat, always being ready, always anticipating, always finding and I just assumed that it was a part of my soul. Well, this started after I consciously rejected male dominance and after I consciously rejected a dominator paradigm. I began to recognize it every night and consciously start to reject it, and enormous changes began to follow. I sold my guns in Colorado, and you'll hear later that my shaman, Chris Long, said a warrior laid down his arms in this sacred valley, the San Luis Valley. But all kinds of things started to break loose in me, and we talk about a paradigm being what you think about before you think about something, or if you think about the movie The Matrix, when Neo is first, pulled out of the Matrix and exposed to reality. He's got to pop, there are shocking consequences that follow to your consciousness. And this was all going on, and I believe this was inextricably woven with what led me out of immediately the San Luis Valley and the mountains. I have been up on the mountain out of the world of men for a long time, and I will, if you will say, have been given a vision. but huge chunks of what I thought was my core unchangeable personality left me there, and I had to be stripped there, kind of worn down by the struggle of the winter. So I left, and the mountains let me go. And as I left, I made a tobacco offering at the end of the driveway once I got to Highway 17. And I said to the mountains, thank you for bringing me here. Thank you for what you have done for me, and thank you for letting me go. And it's been great since I've been back here in Northern California. I'm staying on a property with my friend Jack in Calistoga. It's a multi-acre property, and it's got, I'm in a kind of the back industrial part, but there's an amazing little community back here, some people living in trailers. And people of many skills, metalworking and so on, who are all hip to what's going on. And there's a great community of preparation of both skills and stuff here. But I got to teach almost as soon as I got back. Just a couple of days after I got here, when the car was dead and I hadn't got it in to get the tranny on, I'm sitting around a fire outside of one of the trailers here with six people, most of them 23, I think one was 31, and they started asking me questions, and I got to teach. Now, where I was in Colorado, the only thing I could teach would be jackrabbits and coyotes. Squishies heard it all. And it was such a wonderful, uplifting experience to sit around. And we had a great conversation, and what I see here in Northern California is a younger generation adapting and responding to what they clearly understand is the collapse of human industrial civilization. I asked one of Jack's sons, I said, well, what do you think the future is going to be like? And he said, I don't think it's going to be anything like the present. Now, that was a great answer. But we talked for a long time, and now I'm observing, because actually for the last few years I've been living like hundreds of millions of people, or perhaps, in the U.S. are living now, as collapse proceeds. I've been watching people adapt, and now I'm living in a little trailer with a propane. I got to watch which circuit breaker, which switch I throw where without popping a circuit breaker, and I guess I've been trained for this. But where I am in Napa County now is a very rich country in terms of it's the heart of the wine-growing area, Napa-Sonoma County, and that's where Sebastopol is, where my old house was, just over the hill. There's tons of money here, and there are jobs here, but the jobs are, you know, for people who are incredibly poor, and there are emerging around the very wealthy places like St. Helena and the big vineyards in around. There are emerging little outlying areas where land is cheaper, rent's cheaper, apartments are cheaper, because one of the things that's apparent here is that the 1% needs to have their employees, not close, but close enough so that they can get to work for what minimal wages they can get. So I'm watching these adaptations take place, but I'm also, since I've reconnected with some dear friends, over on the other side of the hill, in and around Sebastopol, Tacoma and Mark and a few others, I am so very aware that there is an alive and extremely vibrant spiritual social network that is functioning well here. And you know, we're kind of coming up on time, because now I'm going to get into the real meat of the show, and I'm going to unload some stuff, and I'm going to share what these last 3 weeks have taught me. But it's time for a song. And I don't let people request songs often, but Andy Capper, who directed the six parts of Vice, Apocalypse, Comma Man, made a request for a song. And who could refuse Andy Capper? That was such an amazing piece of work. I've been in touch with Andy, and what I am told, for those of you who are following Vice and this amazing piece of work that they did, that Andy did, and you know, the whole crew did, is that they're going to assemble now all six parts, and I think they're going to add some additional footage into a like a full length feature. And they are going to, according to Andy, they're going to rent a theater up here in Northern Cal, hopefully in Santa Rosa, because that'd do me the most good. That's the most central to my hub, but who knows? But up here somewhere. and they're going to screen that as a premiere, and then it's going to be fully released with publicity and so forth on the net. So Apocalypse Man is far from over. So when a great guy like Andy Capper, who stands in a league by himself with director Chris Smith of Collapse, just I have such enormous respect for him. When he wants a song, he's going to get a song, especially on my show. So here's a song that you heard in part six of Vice Apocalypse Man. The song is called Do You Realize by Flaming Lips. Hope you heard it, Andy, and thank you so much, you and Vice, for what you did. Okay, now, let's get back to this little teaching lesson that I'm doing here. On March 6th, Peak Oil News and Message Boards posted a great article. I'm sorry, I don't know the byline on here. Are you crazy to continue believing in collapse? Question mark. He wrote, it's nerve-wracking to live in the historical moment of an epic turning point, especially when the great groaning garbage barge of late industrial civilization doesn't turn quickly where you know it must, and you are left feeling naked and ashamed with your dark worldview, your careful preparations for a difficult future, and your scornful tittering relatives reminding you each day what a ninny you are to worry about the tendings of events. Persevere. There are worse things in this life than not being right exactly on schedule. Two simple words explain why more robust signs of an economic collapse have hung fire since the tremors of 2008. Inertia and fraud. Never in human history has there been such a matrix of complex systems, so vast, dense, weighty, and powerful for running everyday life, nor a larger population engaged in it. That much stuff in motion takes a while to slow down. The embodied energy has kept enough of it running to give the appearance of continuity. For instance, Agribiz still sends its amber waves of grain and tankers of corn syrup to the PepsiCo snack food factories, and the Walmart trucks still faithfully convey the pallets of Cheetos, Fritos, Funyuns, and Tostitos from the PepsiCo loading dock to the big box aisles of glory. The freeways still hum with traffic, even though oil is pricey at $100 a barrel. The lights stay on. The gabble and blabber of cable TV continues remorselessly in the background of all life. All of that is due to inertia. It gives the superficial impression of the old normal carrying on. Things go on until they can't, the immortal words of Herb Stein. The fraud is present in the abuse and misrepresentation of official stats used as metrics in government policy, in the pervasive accounting chicanery of that same government and its fiscal dealings, as well as our leading financial institutions and corporations, including control fraud and banking, interest rate, blah, 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 blah. So don't feel bad that this colossal armature of folly still stands, and have faith that the blinding light of God's judgment will eventually shine even under the watery depths where failed trust has sunk. That's a great sentence. Sooner or later, the relationship between reality and truth resets to the calculus of what is actually happening. Meanwhile, the questions worth reflecting on are, what is the shape of the future? How might we conduct ourselves in it and our way to it? And how will we think and feel about all that? It's very likely that the journey to where we're going will be rougher than the actual destination once we get there. That's true. There is a hearty consensus outside the mainstream financial media and the thickets of academia that the models we have been using to understand the economy look more broken each month. No kidding. And this surely adds to the difficulty of constructing our own mental models for how the everyday world of the years ahead will operate. Some of the commentators in Blogville and elsewhere like to blame capitalism. Capitalism is a phantom adversary, as I said it was. It isn't an economic system. It isn't an ideology, reality, or belief system. If the word means anything, it describes the behavior of accumulated surplus wealth in concert with the known laws of physics, the movement of energy through time and space, and the choices we make organizing society in relation to that. During the high tide of industrial expansion, when fossil fuels were cheap, we accumulated the greatest wealth surplus ever in history. Humanity made some very bad choices, squandering this possibly one-time, certainly one-time bonanza. The demonizers of capitalism propose to remedy our compound predicament just by getting rid of money. That's nonsense. I'm reading some of the high points in the story. What's cracking up first is the complexity and abstraction of our current money operation, sometimes loosely called the financialized economy. Then they say, the hidden or ignored truth of this quandary expresses itself inevitably in the degenerate culture of the day, the freak show of pornified criminal avarice that the USA has become. The catch is, some things do matter, for instance, whether the human race can continue to be civilized in some fashion when the techno-industrial orgy draws to a close. Those were some of the high points from that. It sets a good tone. It tells us that there's more wrong than just a one-issue this, a one-issue that. It's wrong to get caught up in division. And there's been some real heroism on that front this week. Now, I told you before that I consciously rejected the male dominant gene, and then over a period of months, every time I would start to think about the old warrior stuff, I would consciously reject it and let go, to the point where I became so sensitive that I could no longer even watch anything that had to do with violence. That I could no longer think about war or combat. I told you I sold my guns, laid down my weapons of war. And it was what I recognized, what hit me so clearly, was that, as Daniel Quinn would say, now we get to Daniel Quinn, Rian Eisler, Terrence McKenna, that the culture, the programming, the paradigm, the things you think about before you think were becoming clear to me. And I was disengaging from those to the point where, as people started getting all hysterical over the Ukraine, this week, and there's still a frenzy on my Facebook page. And let me confess, man, I did this for years. I did it probably better than anybody. I could do the best analysis on why Ukraine was important because of the pipelines, blah, blah, blah. And the U.S. is absolutely comically absurd through NATO trying to block. I could have gone into all that, but then I realized, no, if I go into that, what I am doing is acknowledging that conflict is the way of things. I'm reinforcing the meme. I am reinforcing mother culture, which is woven into us, as Daniel Quinn wrote in Ishmael, so deeply that we don't even know it's operating. Well, I have become extremely sensitized to that. And I can't go near any war hysteria stuff now because I recognize, and this is where I owe a deep debt of gratitude to the mountains and to my shaman, Chris Long, and to the spirits that worked on me now there, I can hear it and I rebel. I recoil as if from a hot flame when I see the meme subtly reinforcing itself through the trickery of making us believe that there is really something important for us to get excited about over the Ukraine. Forgetting about global warming, forgetting about radiation, forgetting about infinite growth, the meme will do anything to distract you from looking at the meme. Mother culture, as Quinn called it, or father culture, really a patriarchal dominating culture. And the moment you get caught up in saying, well, we have to deal with Putin, or we have to deal with the Ukraine, and oh my God, Blackwater's in the, this is all stuff that's so frickin' old. It's so tired, but yet it is like a drug, and I admit that I got off on that drug because I was conditioned to. I was conditioned to by my experience. And so as the Ukraine was playing itself out, and I was looking at people posting, you know, exciting, what they thought was exciting, important stuff about the Ukraine, what I realized was, I go, no, man, that's just somebody offering me a dose of crack. I don't want anything to do with that. And this is where we come to Abby Martin. Abby Martin, was it this week? Yeah, probably within the last week. She delivered a really strong editorial opposing Russian military intervention in the Ukraine, forgetting that it's an air broad, and when I heard her do that, my first reaction was, shook my head. And I thought, wait a minute. And then what I realized, because I had been, and now here, I will admit that I could be 100% wrong, and Abby will probably let me know if I am. But this was my take on it. This was my intuitive feel, was that when Abby Martin said, military intervention in a sovereign state is wrong under any circumstances, my take, as I have come to understand it, was that she was attacking the culture, whereas everybody who wanted to get excited about the Ukraine, who were taking the drug, the emotional drug, that the culture was offering in terms of war scare, hysteria stories that for some distract from global warming, for some distract from nuclear radiation and all the other things that are killing us, to run off down those drug-laden alleys as a distraction. And then my take was that what Abby Martin had done was she had fired a shot directly at the heart of the culture that even tolerates war without bothering to go into even and discuss all of the great stuff that's so meaty to discuss that I would have, you know, blown people out of the water with 5 years ago or 10 years ago. I don't do that anymore. I'm different. I'm not a warrior anymore. And it's flipping the bird at the culture. And my gut absolutely told me, you just stand by her. Because again, this is my take, and I could be completely wrong, and Abby can call me out in public if she wants to. But you know, it was my take that she was listening to her instinct. She was listening to her gut and to her heart. And I didn't understand it at first. But it slowly became very, very clear that that was a great thing that she did. because she challenged any culture which even tolerates war, which even participates in it or chooses to take sides in it or analyze it under any circumstances. We know, those of us who have been, and I know you're out there, man. This is such a strong, awake, spiritual family that we have here, and we reach in so many hundreds of thousands of people around the world. It's amazing. We understand, and this is what I wrote last night and posted on Facebook. It's had more likes than just about anything I've ever posted in all the time I've been on Facebook. I wrote, I do not care about political leaders or personalities. They are distractions. I do not care about war scares and the emotional drugs they unleash for those addicted, as I once was. I am not facing down a man or men. I am not facing down regions or peoples. I am not facing down an economic system. I am facing down a culture, an utterly failed culture that is lethal, blind, useless, and almost incomprehensibly destructive. Human beings do not have to die, but our culture must. Boom. There it is. And as this came to me last night, I realized something else, because I am no longer a warrior, because a warrior comes from a basis of division. There's an enemy and there's the things that I'm protecting. And those who jump into the hysteria over Ukraine or political parties or why don't we get this corporation or get that guy, what they're doing consciously as they do it is accepting division and separation, instead of living in a conscious oneness with everything, all my relations. And then when you start to do that, it's amazing. It is extremely unsettling, and it's disorienting. But man, once you open this door, you realize that there's a whole universe on the other side of all of this. So it's my take. I think that you know, thank God Abby Martin's still there, and thank God RT is still there, and that's all we need to know for the time being. But I trust people who take bold steps like that, and I think a benefit was had around the block on that. Grandma Coco put a comment up on the page this week. She said, instead of assuming, I love Grandma Coco, we have pissed off nature. We accepted ourselves as nature. Instead of, hey, wait a minute, we are nature. A dog does not get worried that he cannot swim like a swan. A dog is a dog and meant to be exactly that. We humans, hasty two-leggeds, are exceptionally good at doing what we do. Look, Ma, look what we did. Did you ever play a game called Mother May I? Whether moving forward or back, need to have permission. Now, Graham Hancock is right about working with our inner self. That is the key. And what I'm really, really happy about is that I am seeing that so many of us are on the same page. And one of the, I'm looking out the window here at a beautiful brown and white goat flopping its ears. It's nice to see. It's nice to be back in this place. Anyway, there are so many of us who are awake, and I'm having this conversation over and over again with close friends, and I hear this and I see this on Facebook a lot. And what I hear and see on Facebook is talking to friends is, you know, there's all these people that all they do is watch news, and all they do is watch news, and you know, they just don't get it. And I go to hang with these people, and they just don't get it. And I must be sitting in a very unique place, but as I've pointed this out to other people, they've kind of agreed with me. I said, dude, if all you look for is the people who are not listening, you're going to miss all the ones who are listening and who really have their heads out of their asses. And who are really starting to resonate with this same message now. It's becoming clear that we don't have to battle to change anything except for the culture that we live in, a culture based upon division, separation, domination, fear, because that system is abundantly failing right in front of everybody's eyes. You know, Paul Beckwith had something up this week, and there was something else about, you know, that essentially said, dude, all like a third of the population of the planet has to do to understand climate change now is look out their window. And I'm a climate refugee in part, but you know, all those weather anomalies are still going on. Now I could lay them all out for you, but if you're paying attention, you know, you get it, you understand what's happening. Multiple system failures are occurring at the same time, just as McKenna, Eisler, Quinn, Rupert, so many of us said they would. And we are in it. We are in the fire in the madhouse. Which let me read what Paul Beckwith wrote. I think it plays into this today. Let me scroll back up here. Let me do this. Let's see, Rupert. Okay. Well, if I can find it. Okay, maybe I can't. Ah, there it is. We have entered an abrupt climate change phase. It's in the Georgian Bay News, and it's short, but it's important. We have entered an abrupt climate change phase. The familiar global weather patterns that we, our parents and our grandparents, and most of our distant ancestors, at least as far back as the last ice age remnants, have always experienced are no more. We have entered an abrupt climate change phase, in which an energized, water-primed atmosphere and disrupted circulation patterns give rise to unfamiliar, massive, and powerfully destructive storms, torrential rains, widespread heat waves and droughts, and less commonly but occasionally widespread cold spells. Why is this happening now? Sophisticated Earth systems computer model summaries of state-of-the-art peer-reviewed climate science and mainstream science have generally put the climate change threat out to the latter part of the century. Ha! Global data from all parts of the world, most noticeably the Arctic, shows that really is quite different from that reality is quite different from these models and mainstream thinking. Quote Paul Beckwith: just by looking out the window, much of humanity now senses that something is very different and uncomfortably wrong in their particular region. Depending upon location, vegetation is dying or burning, being toppled by very high wind events, or oceans are invading upon coastlines, or rivers are overrunning banks, or drying up, or both, while rainfall deluges are inundating other regions. In fact, some regions are vacillating between massive floods and massive droughts, or record high temperatures and record low temperatures, even on a weekly basis. As crazy as things are now, they are not bad enough to wake up the general population, enough to vote down, deny our politicians. And he gets to a point, he makes a point here. The only question is, will it happen next year or in 3 years? And there is an absolute inevitability that the overpowering juggernaut of climate chaos, climate collapse, and global warming is absolutely going to be the elephant not only in the living room but sitting on people's chests, where it will have to be acknowledged very soon. And when that happens, everything is on the table. Then a headshot, if you will, at this human culture, which has to die so that human beings may live, it starts to become available, just as more and more of us are waking up, and there's so many of us starting to wake up. Things are getting better here. Now, I mentioned that now that I'm here and I'm interacting, I went out and had lunch with my friend Tacoma the other day, and this young 18-year-old kid came up and he just said, thank you so much for advice, man. We just so love it. Somebody's talking sense. And so I am back in the world, and I was led back into the world to teach. I'm going to talk about that in a second. But this has been still, I am decompressing. It is like I do a reality check on myself many times a day, because so much has changed, both inside of me and outside of me. You might say I'm manifesting. And thanks to all of you who helped support me to get me here. But there's a song that I want to share and dedicate to my absolutely dear, wonderful, bestest friend in the history of friends, Jesse Ray, who is back in Crestone. I look forward to the day when we'll be able to give each other a big hug again, and that's going to happen. But I had this now in the midst of all of this that's happening, as I'm experiencing more the liberation of my consciousness, the separation from the meme, really what I consider to be an evolution. This song I just had to play, and it's a song from like probably the most celebrated album of all time, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. And get it or not, this is a tracker, truth telling you. Here's a song called It's Getting Better All the Time. Change up, wasn't it? But things are getting better in that they are getting better for me. But I also see, I am also really seeing, and I want you to believe in this, this awakening taking place, people understanding that it's the culture, people coming out of the prison in which we have been locked for so long. So I salute Abby Martin, and I'm so glad she's here. And I salute all of you who are breathing a sigh of relief, knowing that it is no longer necessary for us to engage into the world of division, to feed ourselves drugs and war scares and all that. Sure, we pay attention, but again, not until the bombs fall on us is it our business, because otherwise all we do is get spun into reinforcing the meme and believing that conflict is justified, and that's what the meme, that's what the culture needs us to believe in our separation and division. I want to share with you, some things that were written to me spiritually before I left that had to do with the Odyssey that I was there, while I was there. I left, and those of you who have followed me, you know the story. I'm not going to repeat the long details, but I fired myself from Collapse in 2012 and had to leave Sebastopol, this most amazing house that I'd ever been in, my crops, to go to Colorado. And I went there to die, as you heard in the Vice episode. But while I was there, if you watch Vice, you saw Chris Long of the Singing Stone Lodge, who was my shaman and teacher. I call him Uncle. Did many sweats with him. And my tobacco was on the altar of his peyote lodge, and my peyote, my all-night peyote ceremony was a tough one for me. It was a hard rodeo. There were many veterans there, a few veterans, and warriors there, and no physical damage of any kind was done. That's not the way the plant psychedelics work. no physical damage, but it was a grueling multi-hour experience with almost thousands of volts of electricity being shooting through my body, intense pain, spasming, speaking in tongues, that left me crying in a few places. And this was, and psychedelics will do this, especially when you're in a safe spiritual place. You will confront parts of yourself. And this was about 4 or 5 months ago, and nobody could reach me to call me to bring me back, except for one guy. A Lipan Apache named Crowfeather, who himself was a veteran and a warrior. And he was able to reach into my consciousness through the psychic space that I was in. And he calmed me down and helped bring me back into the world. And when it was all over the next morning, these are all-night ceremonies, he walked up to me and he said, "Man, you were a serious warrior, but you got to let it go. You got to let it go, man. It's time for you to teach. It's time for you to play with children. Time for you to play." And that was about 5 months ago, I would say, 5 to 6 months ago, but that was a consistent message. And when I left Crestone, I left, it was lightning, it was blitzkrieg, it happened so fast. And I was crying, I was so torn in so many ways because I was leaving, above all, Jessie Ray, who I would not have survived that place without her. Without her friendship, without her love, and it was too hard to actually go see Chris and his family to say goodbye. It was like I was being swept away in a tsunami. But I did return some property to their house and say a prayer, and then I wrote him an email, and I called myself a coward for not having the courage to come say goodbye. And Chris is an amazing, loving teacher, extremely powerful. The medicine is strong, and I'm sharing with you guys because I know that in the audience there are a great many spiritual lights who are awake, and I'm sharing this as a means of checking myself, but also as a means of letting you know where my journey took me. And Chris wrote back to me the following. He wrote back, "There is no cowardice to forgive. I see only a warrior who, by laying down his arms in this majestic place, will return home a new man. It is the realm of the shaman that had brought you to us, exhausted, and then exhausted you further here. There had been nothing else for you to do but transform. You said that you came here to die, and you did. Now you have graduated to the next level. Be the prophet, Michael. Be the philosopher. Herald in the new age of enlightenment, spawned by this time of evil. I just ask one thing of you: stop indulging in your self-pity. Lift yourself up, wear your scars proudly, and let the pain of your wounds be your sacred sacrifice, your offering to God. I will visit you and we'll have a lot of fun, so don't worry and know that I understand all too well what you are going through. These mountains have been successful with you. Return home a different person." That was kind of a very clear message and a very wonderful message that coincided. I left within a week of airing of part six of Vice, and I didn't schedule that. The spirit let me go. And my graduation, my diploma, is a beautiful walking staff hand-painted for me by my friend Jesse Ray, which is now my most treasured possession in the whole world. And that was kind of like my graduation from the mountains. But that continued further, because when I got here and started to reconnect with friends here and people that I've known and people that I've impacted here around Santa Rosa and Napa, Sonoma, I was contacted, I made contact with a guy named Luke, who's a great guy. I hope he's listening tonight. And while my car was down, I needed a ride to get some groceries because I had no way to get to the store. Chronic problem. And so he and his wife came up, and it turns out he's a veteran of the Tom Brown Tracker School, as is his wife, who attended the same standard course that I did in Santa Cruz in February of 11. And they came up with their beautiful daughter and gave me a gift basket. And inside the gift basket was an extremely rare Tom Brown Jr. Cassette series about grandfather's prophecy. Now, you have to know a little about Tom. But this was a two-volume set on the fifth prophecy, the stone vision, stone as in mountains, where nothing speaks to you. And it's not nothing, meaning no thing is speaking to you. It's nothing in the act of speaking to you. That's what the mountains do when I got stripped down this winter. And so I listened to these two CDs, and what was the message? In there was a very clear message, the grandfather telling Tom Brown Jr. that from his vision, it was time to return to the world of man to teach. I mean, you can't get clearer spiritual messages than that, and I am so relieved to be back here and to have had a few opportunities to speak and to teach. You all know that I've got some work I want to do here, but now I'm going to tell you, those of you who helped me out so much, what I need. I'm in no immediate financial danger. My Social Security comes in, and this is the month of March when I should get three small royalty checks. So you have been amazingly helpful. You saw me through this. What I need now is a speaking engagement, and this is a message, a request sent out to my friends in and around Santa Rosa, Sebastopol, Calistoga. I need one good speaking engagement, probably in Santa Rosa, maybe Petaluma. That's set up well because it's a new Mike Rupert that's going to be talking. If you've seen me speak before, this guy who you're going to see is nothing like that one. He did die in Colorado. I will be building on the work of Terrence McKenna, Rian Eisler, Daniel Quinn, myself, so many other people who get it so clearly, because I am starting to see it more clearly about what the issues are, as are so many of us. And one good speaking gig with a good video of that, at a good venue that's well promoted, that I'm back in the world of man, and I will not be living as a mendicant anymore. By the way, mendicant had to do with orders of friars who owned no physical possessions and lived in an exchange cooperative relationship with their ecosystem. I'm not going to be living that way anymore because those lessons are learned. I do have to re-enter the world of man. There will be a website coming. I'm not starting a new business again, but I am going to become available because that's the calling, especially if Vice does this great premiere up here. So what I'm asking, if you are in the area and you're one of my friends, please let's see what assistance I can get in securing a venue, the right kind of art, the right kind of planning, the right kind of promotion for a speaking gig. And I'm just going to sit down in an easy chair like Terrence McKenna did or like Derek Jensen does, and you're going to hear me talk about this as excitedly as this, because there's more important things to talk about. And one thing I absolutely know is that there are so many of us who need to gather in one place where we can be this spiritual with each other without getting sidetracked into the dualism, the fear, the division, and spinning our wheels. We understand what the enemy is. The enemy is a culture, and disentangling from that culture as it fails is empowering us on a daily basis, and I would submit that Abby Martin was evidence of that. That's just my interpretation. I could be completely wrong, but that's what my gut told me was happening. Once we fully take on the culture and see it for what it is, I believe it will start to fade away very quickly. And we know that because of climate collapse and climate chaos, that it's going to be peeling away. The facade is evaporating in front of our eyes right now. So that's what I need. Now, you can reach me if you are in or around Santa Rosa and you want to help me get this one good speaking gig set up. And God knows we can pack the room. We can make money on this. This can be a successful venture. And you want to reach me, you can either contact me through Facebook or I want to thank PRN. There is an email address where you can reach out to me, and these emails will get forwarded to me, and I will respond, which is Kara Lee, K-A-R-A-L-E-E, K-A-R-A-L-E-E, at GaryNull.com. You can email her if you're in and around the area, you've got some ideas, you've got a venue, you've got video stuff, you've got graphic artists, you've got, you know what it takes. And we can put this on here, then we can expand this message further, because there are so many people who get it. and so many voices who need to talk, and I have learned some amazing lessons. I've not let you guys down all this time. So we got 3 minutes left. Let me see if there's one quick call out there. 1-888-874-4888. We'll take a call real quick. Spirit just bid me to do that. And in the meantime, I'll just continue breathing easier every day. We have talked, and Carolyn Baker talks about it, and so many of us talk about it. In one way or another, the journey that we have to get into right now is inside. Terrence McKenna had a great line. He said, "God is a lost continent in the human mind. We have to go to the far backs of our minds." But one of the things that he said that I am so very, very clear on, and this is what I believe, and this is where I go a little bit beyond people like Guy McPherson, and not to criticize at all. We are facing near-term human extinction. That's absolutely right, but there's something beyond that, and this is what the spiritual message also teaches. Greg Braden was on with Gary earlier this week. I may not be as optimistic as Greg Braden, but from a spiritual standpoint, it is my knowing. After two Uweepis, after a peyote ceremony, after Sundance, many sweat lodges, and after the process that I have been through, it is my knowing that this is nothing but a spiritual event which is taking place here. And we can all see it, the end of a 10,000 or so year culture of a way of life. And again, human beings don't have to die. The culture has to die. But McKenna says this extremely clearly. And we'll close the show with this. Because we're out of time. And I've only got, I got a couple minutes left, but I need to do this. And I see the caller, Josh, on the phone, but I apologize. I got to do this. Terrence McKenna described the birth process, and every spiritual tradition that we've talked about, all of the prophecies, all the evolutions, all the work from all the people we have so come to know and love, who are all singing the same song, all on the same page now, the culture has to die. This is not a death, this is not an end from the Cartesian standpoint, it is a miraculous birth. And that is the message that Terrence McKenna carried so clearly. It's the message that I got so clearly through 21 years of 12-step work before I expanded my spiritual work and all the exposure there, is that you have to die in order to be reborn. And Terrence McKenna very funnily told this story that if you were to walk in on a birth in progress, you would, and didn't know what it was, you would say, "My God, it's horrible. There's blood everywhere. There's screaming. It looks like this massive tumor is moving out of this woman's belly, and blood is spurting, and it's pain and everywhere." And of course, we know that's a birth. And I agree with Terrence McKenna, my friends. We are in the birth canal. We are in the birth canal right now. Hold that in your vision. Hold that in your heart. Focus and ask to see and be revealed to you all the people who are awake rather than the ones who are resisting, because their time is over. And as Michael C. Rupert, I am back in the world of man, getting my legs under my feet, looking forward to what's coming next. Spirit brought me back for a reason and with a new consciousness that I can better serve all of you here on Lifeboat Hour. I will be back with you next week. Libby Halevi will be with us. We got good shows coming up. Boy, have I missed you guys. Tracker of Truth, out.